I've been a Kids in the Hall fan since I was in high school, and I love the show so much and remember being proud that something so wild and weird and funny as hell was not only Canadian, but founded in my hometown of Toronto. And I loved all the guys in the troupe. Kevin McDonald's Simon Milligan character, Mark McKinney's Chicken Lady, Bruce McCullough's Gavin Kid character, Dave Foley's Axe Murderer character. Of course, the French Fur Trappers. That was one of my favorite skits they did. But my favorite above everything else was Buddy Cole, played by Scott Thompson. And Scott Thompson has always been my favorite kid in Kids in the Hall. I always thought he was the breakout star, kind of like how Travolta was in The Sweat Hogs. So when Nick said he might be able to get Scott on the podcast, well, I was excited and, well, I was really super nervous. The Kids in the Hall, being hometown heroes of mine, inspired me just as much as some of my hometown musical heroes have. And as you'll hear, Scott was nothing but super warm and friendly, and of course, he was hilarious. This podcast is just a small slice of the day we spent with him. They say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but Scott Thompson is and always will be the exception to the rule. And quite simply, he rules. As always, this podcast is brought to you with the help of Blue Mic Microphones, and man, these Yeti microphones we're using for the podcast now are just ruling. And Skullcandy headphones. Get them at bluemic.com and skullcandy.com. So here we go. The official Danko Jones podcast with Scott Thompson starts now.
Starting on this tense moment.
Well, we're here. We're starting. Really? And the podcast has started. Nick Flanagan is here with me as always. And Nick has brought his friend, and very honored to have him here, from Scott Free Podcast, from The Fruit Blog, from The Hollow Planet, from Larry Sanders Show, and of course, The Kids in the Hall, Mr. Scott Thompson.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yay. Thank you for being here.
Wow. It is
shout out for Fruit Blog. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, I love The Fruit Blog. Now, we have known each other for, I think, 36 hours. I met you on Monday.
I did, yeah.
And when I met you at Nick's night, at Unlovable, you did stand-up. I'm already a fan, but knowing that you were coming on this podcast,
right.
I just kind of wanted to update myself on what you've been doing lately, and I got into Fruit Blog, and I really got into your podcast because I'm a big podcast guy. This listening to podcasts
we're on a podcast
is what started this one, so I've listened to all of them. And then when you walked in, I was like, "Oh my god, I've been listening to this guy for the past 2 weeks. You've been in my ear for 2 weeks." And not only was it you, but you walked in with Paul Bellini from Scott Free Podcast, and I kind of wanted to push you aside.
I think what you mean to say is Paul Bellini walked in with me.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. I wanted to push you aside.
He's always name number one.
Oh, my God, it's Paul Bellini.
And George.
Yes.
And boyfriend George.
And I knew who George was. I don't know if you revealed the name on the podcast.
No, but now we have.
We have. So yeah. I knew it was so, I knew the person you were talking about, and I was kind of watching them while I was watching.
Did they like my set?
They did,
Because Paul's not a huge laugher.
He wasn't. I noticed for everyone. And in the beginning, I don't want to out anybody or throw anybody under the bus, but he was, you know, for the first few, he was kind of giving a courteous smile.
Oh, I know.
You know, not that everybody was watching him. But I was watching him. Right. I saw that he was smiling, but then he was laughing a bit here and there.
Good,
so
good.
It was good.
To get Paul Bellini is always my goal.
Yes.
Is to make him shake with laughter.
He was, when I first met you like a very long time ago, I think I met Bellini probably the same day.
Probably.
At a theater in Toronto, you know, the Skechers and show.
Right.
And I actually did stand up, and he was at the stand up show. So I don't think you were actually there. He was just at a stand up show, coincidentally. And I think he said something mildly complimentary to me after at the end of the night, and I was just I was so into it. I was amazed.
You get a compliment from Paul Blee, you'll like coast for weeks.
But if I'm wrong, if he hears this,
he parses them out very, gingerly.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that from listening to the podcast.
Oh yeah, he's not sentimental. He does not believe in buttering people up. He would and he never lies.
Is he one of your oldest friends?
Yes, he is.
And he's tied in with Kids in the Hall as well.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. A writer.
He was a writer on the show, and he's also the towel guy.
Yes,
right. Right.
Mark made him the towel guy.
The poster boy.
Kind of a symbol, I guess, in a way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and so when I started listening to the podcast, I'm like, who is this Paul Bellini?
I know.
So I did a Google search. So I figured I knew him by face.
Bellini, it was like iconic to me when I was watching Kids in the 90s. I saw this guy, they were like, Bellini. And I was just like, oh, Bellini.
I think he's got such a musical name.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So many of us are blessed with names or not blessed with names. Mm-hmm. I'm not blessed with a great name. Scott Thompson does not have musicality to it. Danko Jones has musicality.
Yeah.
I think hardcore
right.
kind of musicality.
It's the the hard D and the hard K.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's like that Nordic death metal
sound. Bellini.
Yeah. Bellini's got some musical.
Sounds like an opera.
Balloon. You know? Bellini.
Flanagan's got a lot of musicality to it.
Yeah, I like Flanagan. I like the three-syllable thing. I think that having a name like Nick Flanagan or like Scott Thompson, the issue becomes you're not the only one. You know what I mean?
That is true. Yeah, that's true because Scott Thompson is so common. The new head of Yahoo is Scott Thompson.
I'm friends with two Scott Thompsons on Facebook.
Really? Yeah. I know. The guy from PayPal is Scott Thompson. I mean, that's embarrassing. Oh, okay. Although my name does come up before the head of Yahoo, which is pretty cool that I actually come up before the head of Yahoo.
Is that on a straight Google search?
Google search. I think he'll probably have that changed now that he's the head.
Right.
Because he's probably going, who the fuck's this guy?
Who's this guy?
Are you kidding me? He comes up before me?
He could squash us like a bug.
So hopefully there's not going to be a big Nick Flanagan mogul out there.
There's already a golfer named Nick Flanagan.
Is there?
There was a golfer named Danko Jones. D-A-W-N. She's from Canada.
Really? Did you see Peter McKay's new wife?
No.
The Minister of Defense. He married this gorgeous Iranian woman.
Oh,
I heard about that.
Trilingual.
Did she get in trouble with her nanny? Is
that no, you're thinking. No. You're thinking of
she was gorgeous.
Gorgeous. The Indian woman.
From Brampton. She was hot as hell.
What's her name? Not Rona Ambrose because she's not Indian.
It's not that MTV VJ.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah, she was hot as
Ruby Dalla.
Ruby Dalla.
I remember meeting her like 10 years ago and going, oh my God, this woman's going to be the prime minister if she wants it.
Yeah.
But she screwed up with Filipino nannies. You don't cross a Filipino nanny.
What happens?
People. Oh, Filipinos don't forget.
Yeah.
Get even. You don't do that. I lived there when I was a kid. You don't cross the Pinoy.
I'm half Philippines.
I was hoping you might be.
Are you?
Yeah. I thought. I kind of guessed. Yeah. I'm looking and going, he's part Pinoy, and I can see it. My Pinoy dar is very good.
I read about
Darwin. You're Darwin.
I'm not Darwin. So you know a lot about Filipinos.
Pedro.
Yeah.
No.
Julio.
June.
Jose.
You're June.
June. I had an uncle June.
Rodilio. Joji? You're Joji!
I know a Joji.
Rodilio.
Eduardo.
Eduardo? Very, very good name.
Big families? There's lots of people in the Philippines.
When
I was 18.
Out of high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read about that.
Yes.
Which is an interesting thing. And I was thinking, is that going to come up?
Of course
when
it
he
is.
Comes here? Will he be able to suspect?
I did.
Because I'm from a mixed marriage.
Right.
My mom tended to find other couples like that.
Right.
And all their kids that I used to hang out with, you could tell they're Filipino. But always the girls, when they were mixed with Filipino, they were the hottest girls in the school.
Oh, yeah.
That's just my observation.
Filipinos are gorgeous.
Yeah, they're well.
Filipino women. When I was a child, they always dominated Miss Universe.
The women are
you know
babes.
You know who's sorry to cut you off, but you know who's half Filipino is. Enrique Iglesias.
Really? No way!
Not a lot of people know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Full half. His mom full is half. Full Filipino.
Really?
Yeah. Not a lot of people know that. She is. But of course, in the Philippines, she's what do you call this? She's a socialite. She's
So she's really light skinned.
Very light skinned, which is usually what happens. So,
yeah.
And I don't know if he tells a lot of or makes it known, but the Iglesias part, obviously people are going to gravitate towards his father.
Right.
But, yeah. Where were you? Were you?
I was in Nueva Vizcaya province in a town called Aritao, like about 350 kilometers north of Manila.
Okay, so you weren't in Manila.
I spent time in Manila. I was bored with a family, and they hated me. And they got rid of me immediately. So because they thought it was they brought me in because it was a big social coup to have a foreigner. But they didn't expect me. They thought they'd have some tall blonde, you know, like I don't know, basketball playing guy named Chip or something, right. Some perfect. And I was just this messy, clumsy.
It's only what they
nerdy
saw on
guy.
TV.
Yeah,
they wanted Remington Steel or something.
And I broke something. My first day there, I broke a vase. They were rich people. Yeah. And then 2 days later, I was gone.
Oh, that's
and
not
then
nice.
I spent either most way. Of my it was better that way anyways because I was there for an election. It was fascinating because the election was so
Marcos.
Fixed. I was there in the Marcos era, so it was so fixed. I watched the election. I watched the Filipinos line up to vote, and if they had a pen, they had to give the pen in, and they had to get a pencil. It was crazy. He was like, what? Oh, no, you couldn't vote with a pen.
Wow.
So you had to vote with a pencil. And then they had the ballot boxes, and there were no locks on the I don't know what they, that snap or whatever, that clasp. And I was like, it's crazy. This is late 70s, right? Yeah. There were no international observers. The only international observer was me going, oh, my God. It was so cool. And I remember being with my Filipino family, the rich people, and they would just, like, bomb through Manila in this big car. And then no matter what they did, it didn't matter. If some cop stopped them, they just gave them some money, and it was done with. They were a nasty family,
and they were probably tied with Marcos.
Absolutely, and then I spent most of my time in the north in a very poor family, the Calusas in Aritao, 12 children. I lived in their home.
Wow,
it was phenomenal. No electricity, no running water.
They were all super nice.
Yes, yeah. No windows, no floors.
Oh my God. So wait,
we shit in a hole in the ground.
I couldn't do that.
We farmed with a carabao. It was crazy. I slept on a mat with, like, all the boys. I was freaked. I didn't have a bowel movement for 10 days.
Did you slaughter any animals?
I killed a chicken.
Did you have balut?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
What's balut?
What is it?
Balut. I haven't even eaten it.
Why didn't you ever have balut?
I am not eating it. It's
You are so.
No. It's my mom told me what it was. I never ate it.
It's a fertilized duck egg.
Okay.
Boiled. Like, it's a hard-boiled, fertilized duck egg. So, in other words, it's a hard-boiled egg, but inside it has a fetus.
Oh.
It is
A little huey.
A little tiny fetus swimming. Yeah, kind of. They're all different color. Or it can be different. It can be the yolk can actually not have the actual fetus. Sometimes the yolk has, like, a little tiny fetus swimming in, like, broth.
Wow.
It's a really freaky thing.
Imagine there were aliens and they farmed us and there was some sort of
a
boom, like,
and everywhere you go in the Philippines, and I don't know what it's like. No, this is 30 years ago when I was there. So everywhere you go, balu.
Yeah, that's what
and
I remember.
And you have to try. I mean, my thing is, I'm very much when in Rome. So if this is what you do, I'll do it. I mean, within reason, okay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I was in Bosnia 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't have gone, I'm not going to drag the Muslim woman into a bush and rape her. You know what I mean? Maybe that I won't do. But I will eat your borscht.
Yeah.
And so, I'll have some of your special liquor.
Sure.
But no genocide.
No. But back when I was 18... I don't know. I might have.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what I would have done. At 18 years old, when I was in the Philippines, I was living in a dictatorship. It was there was like insurrection in the hills in the area I lived in. There was full of the New People's Army, so there were guerrilla. There was guerrilla activity and all that sort of thing.
That's a real Filipino experience.
It was amazing. It changed my life.
How long were you there for?
Well, I was in the program for 11 months,
right?
And I was half of it was in this country in the north in Bonnyville, Alberta, with my partner, my Filipino partner, and then the other half of the year was in Philippines. And it changed my life.
How did it change your life?
Because, okay, number one, okay, I grew up in Brampton in the 70s. I grew up in a time when Brampton was white. I mean, white.
Okay,
it was a Portuguese-Anglo divide. The Portuguese were the other.
Right.
And Anglos were absolutely everything. And there was even a Catholic-Protestant divide. And this is how old I am. I mean, and so... But I grew up as a child. I was obsessed with the outside world. I wanted out so badly. And anytime I saw anybody that was different, like an Indian girl or anybody foreign, I would just glom onto them like, who are you? Yeah. What the hell's going on with you?
You're my ticket out.
Yeah. How did you get this color? Take me.
Yeah.
Right? Not understanding that that meant nothing. I was like going, oh, they must be exciting. Of course you realize as you get older, people are exciting because they're excited. Exciting. People aren't exciting because they're black or Filipino or gay or any of those things. Those are just, you know what I mean?
Well, the pornography would maybe make you think that people are exciting because of their race. Or
So, and then, you know, and then basically, so the Philippines, the moment I left school, I was like, I'm getting out of here. And anytime I'd see someone different, I'd be like, oh, I can't believe. That's why I'm obsessed with fruit, because I saw the first time I had a mango, I was like, my God, this is the world. There's such a big world out there. And so the Philippines, I went there. I'd never really known anyone that wasn't white, really. I'd never really known anyone that was really poor. I'd never been to the third world. I'd never been on a plane. I'd never seen anything.
Right.
And then this family took me in, this poor family, and it was shocking to me. Because, you know, like I was a good, like, liberal kid, and I wanted, you know, and I had all those values, and I wanted to believe that everybody was the same, but you know, and everybody says that, but I don't know if people really believe it. And from when I was in the Philippines, it was this kind of like this almost like forced into this belief system, like you've got to accept that we are all the same, and you can't forget that. Like, I would look at these people and go, they live in absolute poverty, yet they somehow find a way to be happy. Not that I'm gonna like say, oh, the happy peasants. I mean, they shouldn't have to live like that. Yeah. But it made me realize that, my God, they want the same thing. Like, I was living with people that I would see on National Geographic and going, oh my God, I'm here.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they're not scary.
You're Michael Jackson in the black or white videos.
They're not scary. They're like, oh my God, they just want, holy shit. We're the same. It was just a shock to me.
Right. Yeah, that's a great experience.
And it affects my whole work, all my work.
It's really, really.
I think so. I think all my work is about, I think, people might think that I'm a divider, but I don't think I am. I think my whole thing is I don't really worry about political correctness or stepping on anybody's toes, because I feel very... I feel very profoundly that everyone's the same and everybody wants the same thing. So my job is to bring things out of the darkness and put them in the light and go, look, it's not that big of a deal.
Have you been back?
Twice I've been back, yeah.
Oh my God, that's more...
I went back years later when I had money. After the kids in the hall to visit my family and to give them some bit of money.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it was very difficult because this is before the age of instant communication. Even like we're just talking 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But you still
no texting.
No. Yeah. Even when I was there, my parents wouldn't hear from me for months.
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
Months.
Yeah.
And they'd get these aerograms, these letters that were actually envelopes.
One sentence or something?
Yeah, you know, you'd write everything in there. And you never even knew. You know, back then it was a dictatorship and you didn't know if your mail was being opened. Right. Anyways, what did you ask me before?
If you'd been back.
Yes, I went back and it was difficult because I had to cross a cultural taboo, which is, and I kind of screwed up. I wanted to give them some money to help them out, but it meant that by doing that, that shamed the father.
Oh. And charity.
I screwed up. So he wouldn't take it. So then what I had to do was I had to do it through one of the sisters. And then she had to do it.
Yeah. I kind of understand
that. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was doing.
Right. But your heart was in the right place.
Yes. And then then the second time I went back and I met some people. I told one of this guy that I used to hang out with when he'd been part of my Bacata, my gang. And I wanted to tell him that, that I was gay. Oh.
That's probably not a good call.
No. With what I remember, he just looked at me like I hadn't said it. And then we continued talking and I just went, oh, okay, this is not meant to
be. Maybe not. Yeah.
He pretended I hadn't said it.
Well, you've heard of Metallica.
Of course.
But Kirk Hammett, the guitar player, he's half Filipino.
Okay.
And he emailed me once out of the blue. He got my email from a mutual friend and he said, "We know who you are. Hey, Pinoy, we know who you are."
You guys are such a complicated...
And I'm the biggest Metallica fan. I almost had a heart attack.
We know who you are.
We know we know what you are. We know what you are.
We know that you're Filipino.
Yeah, that's what he meant. Yeah, we know what you are, Pinoy. So that was pretty heavy.
Well, you guys have a strange...
There's I never get Jewish emails like that.
You don't?
No, I never get Woody Allen writing me and saying, "Hey,
we know you're a Jew.
I know your mom's
Flanagan.
We know what you are."
Have you thought about Jewicizing your name?
I've given it thought.
You're in showbiz. My mother's last name is comedy.
Nick Liebman, and now appearing.
That thought has even crossed my mind about you.
Of me changing my name?
Yeah.
I would do it. I think it would be an interesting way to reinvent. I kind of feel like I'm in the process of a slight shift in my brain.
Well, you definitely read Jewish more than Irish.
Flanafarb.
But I kind of don't want to lose the Flanagan. I like it.
No, it's kind of fun.
Weird, fun thing to it. So,
I've been thinking about, I should probably change my name. I could probably pull off Jewish.
Okay, so
I mean, people always think
I'm slightly
Jewish.
Rabbinical air sometimes.
A rabbinical air. Does that mean I'm like kind of a? Does that make me like a snob or?
No. I just mean when you kind of start getting into subjects. It's I feel like
I've read a lot of books.
Yeah, I feel like
that makes me Jewish.
I've read the Torah.
I'm bookish, Jewish.
Jew.
Well, I certainly love the idea of studying religious texts in a monastery or some sort of a cloister.
You like the idea of it.
I love the idea. And it's I love the idea of being a Jesuit. I thought that would have been really cool, living in a drafty castle with a group of men swanning around in robes, barefoot,
secret
praying.
Sex.
Secret sex in the cloisters.
The Pope just made an announcement 2 days ago about gay marriage.
Not into it?
No. He's not into gay marriage. He's just into, but...
It's going to destroy humanity.
Yeah.
Oh,
He's going to destroy humanity.
It's not just...
We've just got to keep gay where it should be, which is just getting blowjobs from other fathers.
So that's what he meant.
In the corners of the Vatican. That's what he really meant. You don't need to get... You don't need to put a ring on it, is what he meant to say.
Because when I read about it...
You can put a cock ring on it. You don't need to put another ring on it.
Was there a real Puritan thing going on in Toronto, in terms of introducing the sort of gay themes to Kids in the Hall stuff at that time? What was the acceptance level?
It was a struggle every moment.
Yeah?
Really?
Constant battle.
Because even after Buddy Cole kind of lifted off?
Constantly.
But that was the anchor...
Every
character of the show for me. I waited for.
Well, Buddy I would Cole say it would be. Out. I would say the number one character would have been the head crusher.
Oh right,
probably.
Yeah, that was.
But Buddy's definitely one of the anchors.
But for me, I waited. Oh, is this week gonna have a? I didn't know his name at the time, But if
yeah, buddy, the lounge guy, the bar guy. No, they were always the struggle. Like, I mean, there was Paul and I were talking about it the other day. Like, there, like, you know, this whole debate about bullying and gay kids and that. Even back when I was doing the Kids in the Hall show, you couldn't even say that a child was gay. That because even then, and right. I'm still because homosexuality and pedophilia,
right.
people have linked them in their minds, and I don't care how progressive people say they are, in their dinosaur brain, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this piece that we wrote called Uncle Buddy, and it was about Buddy Cole being like a surrogate father figure to all these gay children.
Right.
And it caused a stink.
Just because of a gay man.
A gay man children. Talking to a feminine right. gay boy.
Right.
They could not separate the fact that Buddy didn't want to diddle the kid.
Right.
And people say that that's not what they're thinking, but it is. And so it was not allowed.
Interesting.
So there was no way I could ever mention that. And so that would be so constant battles.
Hate mail?
Yes. They kept a lot of it from me.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, you know, they kept... I didn't get a lot of it, but I definitely knew there was.
But there is one little thing I wanted to tell you is that in doing a little bit of research on catching up with you and stuff,
right.
I found out about The Hollow Planet. I had no idea that you had done...
I'm writing the second one right now.
And reading it, how it ends, it's like, well, this can't just end.
No, of course
it's got to keep going.
You've read The Hollow Planet?
Yeah.
Oh. You read the whole thing.
I read the whole thing.
I'm so excited.
I feel so lame.
But, yeah.
I didn't...
But yeah.
It's very big in Israel.
I'm going to pick it up. Yeah. I'm going to tell you what...
There's a Filipino girl in it, too.
I'll get a copy of it, and I'll fly to Israel.
The girl at the office.
With the bikini.
No. The girl he meets at the office just before he disappears.
You know, the thought crossed my head.
Oh, she's
head
coming
that,
back.
That yeah, that was the one he could have been with.
That's right.
Right. But when I realized that this character you had on Kids in the Hall, the office guy, had a name.
Yeah.
It actually had a name beyond just these office characters. I realized that growing up watching Kids in the Hall, that Danny Huss' character was kind of like my dad.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't want to be in an office.
Yes.
And I went to high school, like an academic kind of, they gear you for university. And I'd say 80, 70% of the people I went to high school with are now in offices, engineers, doctors. And here I was, you know, I was listening to Black Flag and Metallica.
Right.
And when I'd see these skits, people who are also from my hometown making fun of these people, it really gave me the boost to go, I'm not going to go.
Right.
And I went into fine arts.
Yeah.
And I went into York Fine Arts. And I went into film.
Oh, you went to York.
And it was partly because of what I didn't know was Danny Husk.
But it's funny because you see 20 years later, Danny's a different kind of a figure now, like a figure of sympathy in a way. Like when I first started,
I've noticed that turn with how you presented him.
Yes, because when we first started, like the Kids in the Hall, you know, and we started writing our things. We have different themes. One of the themes that I think creeps up a lot in our work is the corporate structure and the corporate world.
Yeah.
We had 2 personas, each of us, in that corporate world. We had the secretary, the female, which in those days, 20, 25 years, really, it wasn't like it is now. So we all had a secretary character, and we all had a businessman character. And they were very different men and women. But they all worked at AT and Love, et cetera. They all worked in that, you know, imaginary world we created. But in those days, it was like the enemy was the straight, white, male in the suit.
It was my enemy.
Yes.
I was approaching university.
But I don't see that anymore. That's why I think in many ways in that journey, if I was 24 now and I was on and I had a television show, that would not, I don't think I would be going after that, because I look at the straight white male now and I go, oh, you poor guys, you can't do shit.
People are putting the people in offices, but they're sympathetic, you know, they're wholly sympathetic characters, or they're partiers, like that workaholic show.
The Office Space.
And, yeah, it's a different mentality.
Well, the power structure is different now. Like, if I was doing that now, my Danny Huss would probably be a 40-year-old white woman with an overly politicized body and a Chinese girl that she adopted on her own, working, trying to have it all.
Right.
That
right.
would be my enemy, pushing her Chinese girl around while doing flashcards and talking on the phone to, you know, some outsourcing people in New Delhi while flashing. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And going, okay, my Pilates class and all the rest of it. It would not be some poor straight white guy doofus in a suit, because I'm more sympathetic to them now. Because
at the time of the airing of those skits, that was those were the people in charge, and
absolutely,
they've been laid off. The whole dream of that, we know now, it doesn't work
exactly. Yeah. And also, you look at men today. Men, I think, in the West, are in far more trouble than women. It's like you look at the state of the male today and all the jobs that have been lost. They're all from manufacturing. They're all those working class jobs are going, et cetera. Women are soaring. They're soaring in the universities. They're, you know what I mean? They're doing great in school. It's boys that are in trouble.
It's also the way...
I'm fucked. Look at my shoulders. They slump.
Look at
naturally.
You. It's true. So I would... my Danny Huss would be a woman.
Right.
You know, and because I really think that sexism, that's what I talk a lot in my act right now, is a two-way street, and there's an awful lot of sexism coming from women.
Nobody really cares what you have to say. You get caught up in traffic because every day's a bad day. What do you do? You don't want to.
What's happening this year? 2012, year of Scott Thompson.
Oh, this is the year for me.
This is the year.
I'm going to, hopefully, I'm going to go on tour. I'm going to do a stand-up tour, and hopefully it'll turn into a one-man show.
That's great.
I'm going to, I just signed with a new manager. I'm going to be doing book two of The Hollow Planet.
Oh, now that's...
And I'm in talks with a company to turn the series into an animated film.
As you are, you mentioned, and I overheard you talking to Nick on Monday at the comedy night, you're starting from scratch with your stand-up material, and now you're saying you're going to go on tour. Have you seen that movie with Jerry Seinfeld called Comedian? As for someone like me, even in music, it was a fascinating...
I love that movie.
I loved it, too.
Of course, yeah.
You just really have to admire him.
It makes you fall in love more so... with the craft, if you're doing it, you know, it really makes you realize.
It does. Like, and the Joan Rivers movie, too.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
I got to see that.
You know, that piece of work is very good.
Yes, it is.
I just love the process that they were able to
But the Joan Rivers one is almost a little scary because...
It is a little scary.
It shows that even at the tail end, you know, when you're in your golden years, you are enjoying it, but you're really, you can't shake it. I was thinking about that the other day, about how it is like... Especially with stand-ups, it's like junkies,
it's
man.
It's addiction.
They're calling you if you have a show, and they're like, can I get on tonight?
I know.
Can I get 5 minutes tonight? And it's like, because, you know, and it's because they want the clapping.
And I never,
and
it took me many, many years to fall in love with it that way.
Yeah.
And then it's a good and a bad thing, because now I'm like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
I do get it. But I like to, I started building the act last year when I toured with Kevin. And but I think I just want, by the end of this year, I want like I want an hour and a half of material.
Wow. So three out of the five kids are doing stand-up.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how unsuccessful we've been post Kids in the Hall.
But that's great because, you know, comedy troupes are actors. They can, you know, they're really actors underneath it all. The mark of the real comedy troupe is the right, if they write their own material.
Yes.
But then if they can do stand-up, that's like... You're a triple threat. Almost.
I think so. And I'm so proud of us as a group. And,
I mean, I don't want to...
No, I am. And we never even talked
about it.
I am. I'm so proud. It's ridiculous. And, you know, there's part of me, lots of me, that thinks, geez, we've had a hard time. We haven't had it easy. We haven't had it easy like the SNL people or SCTV
especially
people.
Especially in Canada. I feel...
Seriously, why, we're nowhere.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And
Mark
is
the only guy who's really
behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes.
But you shouldn't even be the one to say it. Everybody
No, I shouldn't be saying it for you. It's wrong for me to say it. It's embarrassing for me to say it.
But no one else is
going to... But no one's saying
it. No one's saying it.
So I don't even guest on television shows.
Yeah.
I'm not on Doyle. No one's making a big deal about me being on the Republic of Doyle.
Hey, bye. Who's this new game?
You know? What? No one's fucking asking me to be on. That's my Doyle too. That's a Doyle.
Is Doyle a Canadian?
Yeah.
The Republic of Doyle. It's about, I think, a detective in Newfoundland. I don't know.
Yeah. And now it's got Russell Crowe is the guest star this week, and they're making a huge to-do.
Oh my god! I saw the commercial for that. Okay, now
they
wouldn't. I know.
They wouldn't remotely do that for a Canadian.
No.
Yeah, I know.
Never.
I was like, I watched the commercial. And I said, okay, Russell Crowe knows the producer, director.
And it's great that they're doing that, because I think that Canadians should be a little more star-oriented.
Absolutely.
But
it's star-oriented towards...
But they wouldn't be doing that if it was Dave Foley.
No.
They wouldn't be going, Dave Foley! No way.
On Arctic Air.
No, it would be like buried in the credits.
Were you happy with the response to Death Comes to Town?
Not remotely.
Really?
No.
In Canada specifically?
Not at all. It didn't lead to anything. I'm happy with the product.
Yeah.
I love it.
Right. Yeah, it was great.
It didn't really open any doors for us. I mean, I thought it would, but it did not, no.
It's like walking into a storage closet, looking through it, then you leave.
Yeah, like it didn't do anything. Like no one, most people ask me, what are you doing now? When are the kids in the hall going to do something again? I'm like, we did a series.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
That's just...
But that seems to happen with Canadian TV brutally, where things...
I know, but we were on American and Canadian TV. Yeah.
And the American ones, same, no. Nothing.
IFC, no one. If you want your career to die, go to IFC.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're Portlandia. Oh, really? Portlandia is doing great. Yeah. It's getting tons of attention. I think it's hilarious. But no one... And David Cross's show gets more attention than ours did.
Have you talked to fans and stuff about Death Comes to Town?
People love
it. They all loved it.
But... Most fans don't even know.
Fans are I would think that Kids in the Hall fans will always have the antenna up as to what you guys are doing. Yeah. I knew about Death Comes to Town.
But I thought I thought that's what we would cross over with.
But it's when you get, you know, it's same with being in a band. Is like, first it's your friends and your family. Then when you notice people you don't know coming to the shows. And then when you notice people that you're like, I would never in a million years cross paths with this person. You know, that's when you know things are going.
And I thought that, I thought, wow, we're old enough that we've mellowed enough that maybe we're actually going to be at the right time. Maybe we're not too far ahead of our time. But
shouldn't the reruns have caught everybody up with everything?
No. It just didn't.
Do you think it was that it was a miniseries presented in that?
Partly. I think that, like everything we do, I honestly, and this is probably arrogant of me, I just think we're always ahead of the curve.
And
even as middle-aged men, we still are.
And that was what I was so proud of, to be Canadian. I'm like, I don't like this about Canada. I don't like this. But we got Kids in the Hall, so that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, you guys can have SNL, but we've got Kids in the Hall, and it's infinitely more cooler.
Yeah.
Than
I just wish that I just wish it brought a little more money in.
Yeah.
Like, that's what kills me. Like, me and Dave and Kevin, we did stand up this last year, and Dave Foley and Kevin and I were actually in the same city at one point, Chicago. So the three of us did our show together.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing. And I was so proud of us going, here we are. We're like, you know, middle-aged guys. We're still kicking it old school.
That's great.
And we're killing. Yeah. And we're not on television. And we all have financial problems, right? And yet we're out there doing stand-up. I'm going, I'm so proud of us. I could just burst. Because you don't see that. You don't see the SNL people out there doing all that. They don't have to. They've got money and homes and all the rest of it. But it didn't work for us. You know, Mark's doing great. Bruce is doing great. But Mark McKinney should be on camera.
Yeah, Mark, he's such a
he's Mark's
such a
so
performer.
Brilliant. Like, really? Yeah,
well, I mean,
he does Less Than Kind. It's a great show, but Mark should be on camera.
I remember seeing him at the show you did years ago.
Executive producing.
Oh,
The Hall show that you guys did at Massey Hall. He looked like he was shot out of a cannon at that show.
He's amazing.
He was just like, it was so fun. I mean, everyone was great, but he was really, you could see he was just like loving it.
Because he never gets the chance to perform. And, like, you know, the last time Mark really was acting was in, like, Slings and Arrows.
Yeah.
And but in Less Than Kind, he's not. He's and he executive produces Picnic Face too.
Yes.
So he's gone behind the scenes.
I mean, do you think
so? Is Bruce?
There's something with a show like yours where it's like Kids in the Hall, where it's a self-contained universe of a sort.
It is.
And that, do you think in a sense that does that with maybe when people see you, they think of you within that universe?
I do.
Strictly?
And I also
unavoidable.
Think
unavoidable.
The yeah. characters and they do. Were they so... and they just assume that it's almost like those characters are real because they all, we you know, Lady and Love, characters meet other people, like Green Acres and Petticoat Junction. Like, characters go in and out of other people's lives. It seems like a real world. Mm-hmm. And maybe people just assume that we're all gainfully employed and that we're
incredibly
rich
case.
And we don't need to work, but God, we need to work. Like, I'm not Dave Foley. And I mean, everyone knows Dave Foley's problems because of Mark Maron's podcast.
Yeah, you go on a podcast, you
honest, here's the thing. This is
I heard about it when it was
more
first uploaded.
People yeah. listen to that podcast than saw Death Comes to Town. And that's not even an exaggeration.
Really?
Yes.
How do we leave this on a hopeful, happy... Oh, it's the year of Scott. I forgot.
Is that a hopeful note? My whole thing is my ethos is now is just do shit.
I love that.
Do shit. I do my podcast. I make my fruit blog. I do my stand-up. Uh-huh. I write my graphic novels. None of those things pay me. Nothing.
Really?
That's but very... You offered to pay me the other night.
Yes, I did. Well,
$25.
Okay, I know, not they a ton of money.
Okay.
I'm paying the...
I think
honorarium.
Eventually things will catch fire. I look at Fruit Blog and I go, I don't know if people quite... I don't know what it is.
So, but what even is but the take, money?
But that's good. Money? That's a good reaction.
Yeah.
But take solace in the fact that it's all quality stuff.
I think so.
Entertained by it. I mean, if you put them all together, it's hours of entertainment.
I think
the
so.
The comic book and the food blog
and so
the
podcast. I hope this year I get to... hopefully this year I'm going to consolidate my mini empire.
Remember
and actually be a little more like, you know...
Kevin Smith? With his Smodcast network?
A little
network.
Smarter about it.
I think it's all there, and I think the only thing waiting is a meeting. You got to make. You need to have a business
and
strategy
plan. I think the right manager is going to say, look, you're all over the map. You gotta consolidate, put this stuff together.
That's what everyone says to me too. Is like, what are you doing? Like, because I'm doing like eight different, different things, and some of them don't feel like I do kids TV writing, but I don't relate it to do. I did stand up,
but that's
at
what
all,
that's
you know?
What you're doing. You got to do that.
I got
you do. Because you just decided to my. I decided like when I got better, like okay, I'm gonna make myself a brand, but I haven't done it very well because I've been kind of overwhelmed.
Merch.
Well, you've been in Canada, which is a very hard place to make yourself a brand
because
if you're
this country is allergic to stardom.
Yeah, we
and
don't like.
Even
we don't
if
like
you
it.
Say you're, if you want to be a star, that's considered very un-Canadian.
You have Nickelback being the face of the band.
Why do people hate Nickelback so much? What's that all about?
He toured Dango.
I don't hate them. Why would you hate them?
We toured with them. And
I don't hate them. I'm not presenting them.
But
as
why
a
do people hate them so much?
I think they hate them because first of all, it's Canada, so people hate the most famous things
yes.
in Canada.
But they're also hated across the board. Across, I mean, in America too.
They
I mean,
are.
Yeah. And then at the same time,
but they sell millions of albums.
Ontarian,
they sell millions
it's
of albums.
Because it's Ontarian douchiness. you know, like writ large. Are they from Ontario? Or are they from
no,
BC?
They're from BC, Alberta originally.
Yeah,
but
I gotta
say,
know.
I gotta say, when you they were the night they treated us so nice, and they're whether people I'll tell at the last show of the tour, it was such a class move. We've learned from this. They sent us a nice bottle of wine with a card. All the guys in the band signed it, and they said, thank you for the tour. They didn't have to do anything.
No.
Now I've changed my mind.
They were so nice, so, you know, approachable, and it... I mean,
is that what the problem? Because, you know, that old phrase, nice guys, bad band.
It could be.
Have you ever heard that?
Maybe they're the large-scale version of that.
What did I hear? Like, yeah, like,
but
that's
the
like...
The biggest assholes who I've met in rock are the guys who you didn't know about 8 months ago. And they're the band of the month or band of the week,
yeah.
And they treat you and everybody like shit.
Because they're drunk.
No,
on being
no,
famous.
Because they got on the cover of NME, or they got talked up in Pitchfork, et cetera, et cetera. And even some of my friends who have gone on to get a little more popular, they've adopted a bigger bit of an attitude, you know? Where I've had to, every time I meet them, I take them down a notch. You can take out your little hammer.
You have to knock them down. I know when I meet people now that I see that are on top, and I remember what that was like or whatever we were, and I like, oh, you're cruising for a bruising, as my dad would say.
Yeah.
And I like, I'm not going to say who these people are, no, but there's some of them I'm like, oh my God, you think this is going to last forever.
Oh my.
You don't have no idea. It will end so quickly, you won't even know it's over.
Would you say that that is something that, you know, happens universally? What we've gone through with the kids in the hall to some extent is something that you've said.
Some people don't. Some people manage to hang in there forever.
Like Tommy Hunter or something.
Well, if you know Tommy Hunter. I was going to say Madonna, but Tommy Hunter is also a good one. She does often cite him as a huge influence. Which is not talking about Juliet.
Well, he's able to change with the times.
But generally you're going to fall. Yeah. And I think it's just natural. And
makes you stronger.
It does make you stronger. You know, you don't, that's how you don't make, you know, diamonds without pressure or just coal. But you are going to fall, and then you have to remember when you fall, you're going to meet the same people.
Yes. And that's a hard lesson we've learned over the years.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I mean, I'm not saying I was a total asshole, but I definitely had my asshole years.
Asshole-ish.
Absolutely.
Same here.
And I thought that I wasn't.
So what's behavior that should, if you're doing it, you might not know it, but you're being an asshole.
You be nice to everyone.
Uh-huh.
And you always be nice to people that are lower than you on the totem pole.
When I see people who are really successful and at the same time very loved, and you meet them, they're the nicest people.
That is absolutely true. You meet the biggest stars are quite often the nicest.
From my spectrum, Dave Grohl is the nicest guy in music.
He absolutely is. I met him myself. He was a great guy.
So I think that's part of what attracts. I've thought about this over the last few years, but that's what attracts people to people is they sort of, there's something real that's generally at the root of famous people in their personality or successful, you know, like star types, where there's something you can tell.
You can relate to them. Yeah, this is true, because I've met some huge stars and going, oh God, they're so nice. And then you meet people that aren't that big, and they're the biggest dicks ever. Because they're insecure.
You're like, why did this person never succeed? Before you meet them, you think that, and then you meet them and you go, oh.
Yeah, or you meet them and you go, why did they fall? And you go, oh, you're a dick.
He's a dick.
But, you know, anyway, you know, just got to be, and also, like, things like, you have to remember that you gotta be nice to everyone, and you gotta be nice to chambermaids. You gotta be really nice to limo drivers and waiters and all those people, because they're the ones that talk.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I'm always, whenever I'm at a restaurant or something, and then I get recognized, then I gotta up the tip.
You do.
You gotta up the tip, man.
Once you're famous, you can't go 20% and above, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, I got it. Sometimes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like, you do. And I remember when the kids in the hall were on the top, and we would ask, like, limo drivers, we'd always get the same names over and over and over again. Who are the biggest assholes? Who are the people? Who are the most impossible people?
Is it
same people?
Is there a statute of limitations to pass on those names?
Whitney Houston.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, she was the name that came out more than anyone.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, now.
And not surprising. Yeah, this is before it all broke, before. Yeah,
right.
You know, people Crackgate.
She's a diva, yeah. She's such a diva.
But I'll tell you, I mentioned that we might be getting you on the podcast to a few people.
And
they one person said, I've never met him, but I've heard he's a really nice guy.
Oh, that's nice to hear. I like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's more important to me than anything.
Yeah.
I've loved, I've always felt the same way. You've always been a very sweet man.
Thank you.
I always like having you on shows. It's always so exciting. And everyone always gets so excited, too. It's like, it's really funny whenever you drop in on some show, what we're doing, it's like, immediately, suddenly I realize, like, oh, there is actually a Canadian star system.
I noticed it on Monday when you
were. Monday, yeah, it was all about that, so.
Yeah, I was like, you make me cry.
Well, this is a crying friendly zone.
It was funny because when you walked into the club, I don't know if you noticed this, but when we shook hands, I mean, you didn't know who I was. You were just being
I'll be honest. I thought you were cute.
Oh shit.
I did. I noticed him.
That's good.
But Sloan's thank you. Sloan's song Underwhelmed was playing
it?
In the background. And I texted going, he's a bit underwhelmed with me. Sloan's Underwhelmed was playing.
I heard you were in a punk band.
I was. So
maybe you were the
best. No, I was a terrible singer. I took my clothes off a lot.
I did too.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
And you were probably in better shape than I was.
When you look like you're in pretty good shape. I was in pretty good shape. I did a lot of monitor fucking.
Me too.
I did a lot of that.
I had a few different... my favorite... we were actually talking about this last week. We have a lost episode. We were talking about moves, frontman moves, and I would run around like crazy, and eventually I broke my arm doing that.
Okay.
And yeah, I got this scar.
Oh, nice. And, I've had many of those breaks.
Yeah. And I started liking the just standing in place and kind of, you know.
Like standing in place is very powerful. Yeah. That's one thing I've realized, too, that there's a real power in not moving.
Yeah.
Like, I used to move too much. And I go, if you just stand there.
Henry Rollins mastered
Rollins.
That.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They just look at you. And that's what I realized. Like, oh, I don't have to do anything.
No.
I'm going to whiz,
bring
guys.
Them to you.
I'm yeah.
Go to the bathroom.
Yeah, go.
Is that the way to end it?
We're done. Because yeah. I got to go, too. You go first.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Danko. Gotta do a little bit of reminiscing on the days that just gone by. They say don't look back, but I take things in stride. Everybody wanna minimize, they wanna change, it can't be undone. I can see it's a recipe that I was least just a fuck.